to Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast, episode 27. I'm your host, Melissa Goodwin, outdoor guide, photographer, and founder of Girl Gotta Hike. This podcast features interviews with adventurous women, plus trail tips and hiking advice for those who want to disconnect from the daily grind. Today's episode is a bit of a departure from the usual. I'm going to take you back in time to the beginning of Girl Gotta Hike, or actually, before the beginning. Living in New York City, it's all too easy for me to get tied into the day-to-day hustle. While I often dream of heading out on long hikes, it's been the rare occasion that I've actually been able to step out of the fast lane for an extended break. In the summer of 2017, I had become an officially licensed outdoor guide. I hadn't quite worked up the courage to lead my own hikes yet, and my website was a series of blog posts from my John Muir Trail through hike the year prior. But that December, the neon sign for my next adventure started flashing right in front of my eyes. I got an invitation to join a small group of photographers on a trek up to Mount Everest Base Camp. And in a few short months, I found myself traveling halfway around the world with William Vasquez, photographer and founder of Camera Voyages, plus four other New York City-based photographers. 5 years ago this week, on May 9th, 2018, we reached Mount Everest Base Camp at 17,598 feet above sea level. The journey to get there has been taken by many before us and many since, but walking amongst the highest mountains in the world was unbelievably special. And somehow, despite the lack of oxygen in the air, I had enough reserves to write down my daily experience along the way. This episode covers the first 7 days of my trek from Kathmandu to Namche Bazaar. Part two will be headed your way next week. Stay tuned after the episode to learn more about how you can adventure, near or far, with Girl Gotta Hike. Oh, and please excuse any of my mispronunciations. It's been a minute since I've been there. Backpacking season is upon us. If you're in the market for a new pack, then might I suggest you look no further than Gossamer Gear. Whether you're heading out for your first overnight in the backcountry, planning a week-long section on one of the national scenic trails, or setting yourself up for a much longer adventure, their variety of pack styles and volumes will help you carry everything you need and keep you comfortable while you're doing it. If you're newer to backpacking, there can be a lot to keep track of, and it's likely that the gear you're gathering to go inside your pack might feel a bit on the bulky side. A pack like the 60-liter Mariposa offers plenty of room for the basics, plus enough extra to carry any additional creature comforts, while still only weighing in at just over 2 pounds. If you're one who's been at it for a while, then you've likely pared down a bit. Maybe you've switched out your heavy sleeping bag for a more compressible one, or realized that you don't need to bring quite as many layers as you once thought. If that's the case, the 50-liter Gorilla might be more aligned with your new hiking style. And for anyone who's cut it way back and found that bringing only the essentials is their preferred way of making miles, then Gossamer Gear has a pack for you too. Their G420 and Kumo 36 ultralight packs offer much more durability and come in at a lower price point than some of the other ultralight offerings out there. Whatever your hiking style, Gossamer Gear has a pack to fit your needs, and they're all loaded with awesome features like large external stretchy pockets, handy hip belt pockets, and removable back pads, which not only help give their packs some structure, but double as sitting pads too. As a special treat, Girl Gotta Hike the Podcast listeners can use the code GIRLGOTTAHIKEGOSSAMER to get 15% off your first purchase at gossamergear.com. That's GIRLGOTTAHIKEGOSSAMER, and you can follow the link in the show notes to find out more about all of their awesome offerings. Hey there, hikers! Planning on heading for the hills this spring? Whether your plan is to walk for 2 miles or for 20, there are some essential items you should have on hand to make your time on trail safe and enjoyable. A map is key for knowing where you are. A headlamp helps you see in the dark if you end up staying out later than intended. Sunscreen, extra layers, and first aid keep your body protected. And carrying extra food keeps you fueled for adventure. Of all the things to bring, the one that is most essential to my continued well-being is water. But weighing in at 2.2 pounds per liter, it can sometimes feel like a bummer to bring multiple bottles out on my back. Know what makes the thought of carrying it all a little easier to swallow? By bringing along some delicious drink mixes with me. Made with reverence, sustainably sourced, and minimally processed, Resilience Turmeric Elixir from Anjali's Cup tastes as good as it makes you feel. The golden drink mix with ginger and lemon mixes easily with hot or cold water, and the powder comes in individual packets that are ultra light enough for even the most extreme of the gram counting backpackers out there. The benefits of toting along some golden turmeric goodness far outweigh the weight. Turmeric is a powerful anti-inflammatory, and studies have shown that it helps to ease joint and muscle pain, improve flexibility, and is packed with antibacterial properties. All the things I want when I'm out on trail, or when I'm back at home after enduring a long day in the outdoors. Founder, fellow female small business owner, and outdoors enthusiast Anjali Bhargava is offering Girl Gotta Hike hikers and podcast listeners 15% off your purchase. Packets of Resilience Turmeric Elixir come in 10 and 25 count boxes, perfect for popping in your pack. And if you want even more than a mugful at your fingertips, it also comes in larger serving sizes too. When you're prepping your pack for your next adventure, consider tossing in a packet or two of Resilience Turmeric Elixir from Anjali's cup. It's like a hug in your cup, and your taste buds will thank you too. Head over to anjaliscup.com, that's anjaliscup.com, and enter the code GIRLGOTTAHIKE at checkout for 15% off. Mount Everest Base Camp Trek, 2018. Day 1, up in the air. Sunday, April 29th, 2018, into Monday, April 30th, on board Qatar Airways. I am currently en route to Kathmandu, Nepal. In a few days, along with a small group of fellow New York City-based photographers, we'll head from there to the small Himalayan village of Lukla to start an 11-day hike to and from Mount Everest Base Camp at 17,598 feet above sea level. Everest, at its peak of 29,029 feet, is notorious both due to its number one ranking on the geologic height charts and the numerous amount of deaths that have occurred while attempting to summit it. The weather atop Everest is unpredictable, but May generally provides the perfect window between way too damn cold and monsoon season for those with the time, money, and desire to summit the roof of the world. Perhaps you've read Into Thin Air, John Krakauer's harrowing account of his 1996 summit trek, or felt his story more viscerally via the more recently released movie Everest? When I first saw the film, 2 days prior to my previous highest altitude trip, hiking the John Muir Trail in Mount Whitney, a mere 14,505 feet above sea level, I never thought I'd be interested in Everest. Put a pack on my back and send me into the woods for 3 weeks to 6 months, no problemo. Walk up a single mountain that will require a couple of months of hanging out at base camp in sub-zero temps to acclimate, and then still have to use supplemental oxygen in order to make the final push just to maybe not die? Otherwise leaving my frozen corpse behind to become a landmark for other hikers to know where to turn left? No thanks. Plus, isn't the impact of the ever-increasing amount of visitors to Everest been causing major environmental problems for the whole Khumbu region? As an environmentalist and a white person of relative means, is it even ethical for me to go out and add to the impact? But at the time I saw that movie and read the book, nobody had actually asked me if I wanted to go with them to Everest, nor had they provided me with a reasonable price quote and a firm travel date. I had no idea how much the promise of a beautiful mountain adventure really had its pull on me until I found myself plunking down a $900 deposit after having a one-hour conversation and a couple of beers with two acquaintances who had recently been on a trip to base camp. That, and it just seemed kismet that once I decided to really turn my love of hiking into a part-time guiding career, the opportunity to accompany other photographers to Everest simply presented itself. As I'm still in the air and have yet to arrive to Nepal, I can't help but feel a smidge uncertain about my role as incoming American tourist, but that happens anytime I leave New York City. I do know from experience that I'm a conscientious and respectful traveler. I love visiting other regions because I'm interested in and enamored with learning how other fellow humans make their way through the world. As a hiking guide myself, I know that one of the biggest lessons I can teach my clients is how to tread lightly and be respectful of the land around us. I am more than excited for my first trip to Asia, and so grateful for the opportunity to have the time and the guts to take on an adventure like this. Grateful also for my strong legs and lungs, which will bring me not to the summit of Mount Everest, but two-thirds of the way there, and to the neighboring peak of Kalapatar at 18,519 feet above sea level. From a respectful distance, I will admire the beauty of the world's largest mountain, the people who make a living alongside it, and reflect on the lives of the many mountaineers and Sherpas who paid the ultimate price by challenging the limits of the human body. Day 2, Monday, April 30th, 2018, Doha, Qatar. With a 10-hour layover in Doha, we decide to take a tour of the city, sponsored by Qatar Airways, who promised to get us back in time for our final leg to Kathmandu. It's an interesting place, full of both traditional buildings and some of the most contemporary and creative architecture in the world. But we're out after dark, and it's a bit hard to see what the city is all about. What is immediately apparent is the cleanliness and quietness of Doha, as well as the ever-present face of Qatar's emir, 37-year-old Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, painted on sides of buildings and hanging in shop windows. We worry, only half-jokingly, that if our own president has reason to visit Doha, he might be inspired to start putting his face everywhere, too. As our tour winds down, I think how lovely the city appeared in the moonlight, but also that everything in Doha just seemed a smidge too clean to be real. Then again, like their emir, most everything here is still quite young. It'll be fascinating to see how it matures. Day 3, Tuesday, May 1st, Kathmandu, Nepal. 6.4 city miles of walking. We land in Kathmandu around 9:30 local time, and I can nearly count on one hand the hours of sleep I've had over the last 3 nights. Traveling halfway around the world is a new experience for me, and I now realize I should have tried harder to get some Z's. I wait for that third wind to kick in while our driver navigates the seemingly rule-less traffic of Nepal's capital city. After a brief shower break and moment to catch our breath, we all go down the block from our hotel to a lovely garden-like lunch spot where we are serenaded by birdsong. I get my first bite of momos, tasty Nepalese dumplings which, from what I hear, we're going to be eating a lot of over the next few weeks. From there, we head out on foot to explore the nearby Tamil neighborhood and Kathmandu's Durbar Square, the area immediately surrounding the old royal palace of the Kathmandu Kingdom. Tamil is a sprawling maze of traditional old streets, shops, and Buddhist temples, many of which suffered tremendous damage during the 7.8 magnitude earthquake of 2015. Walking through here is akin to navigating an obstacle course. Fun, but not an easy feat for a sleepless, jet-lagged mind. Two things stand out immediately to me: the vibrancy of the colors and the crazy amount of overhead power lines and internet cables. The subject material for photography is unlimited, and it's interesting to see where the attention of my fellow companion photographer's eyes are drawn matches my own and where it differs. Another quick visit back to our hotel, and then we're off for a welcome dinner, which many of us are too zombified from jet lag to really take in. One more day in town tomorrow, and then we're off for higher ground. Day 4, Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018, Kathmandu, Nepal. 3.1 miles of city walking. I woke this morning, not exactly refreshed, but at least rested. Today is another day spent sightseeing in Kathmandu, and tomorrow morning we leave on the early flight to get up to Lukla and start hiking. It's been such a strange experience for me to not be the planner on this trip. Up until last week, I had done such little research, I had to double check on Google Maps to ensure myself that yes, I do know where Nepal is situated in the world. We meet in the lobby for breakfast around 9, then pile into the van and head just over the river to Pathan Durbar Square in Lalitpur, another former palace which endured a lot of damage from the 2015 earthquake. Restoring it has been the handiwork of expert craftsmen who work in traditional building methods and, among other things, carve beams by hand. Today's palace is gorgeous, full of delicate intricacies, golden sculptures of deities, and open-air courtyards. Next, we head to visit Pashupatana Temple, a UNESCO World Heritage Site and the largest Hindu temple, gardens, and open crematorium in the region. It is a most sacred space, and we happen to witness 3 funerals taking place at the edge of the Bagmati River, a tributary to the Ganges. We all take a few moments contemplating the centuries-old ritual of saying final goodbyes to your loved ones. This space is less chaotic than the rest of the city and allows for this kind of quiet thought. After lunch, we visit the Bhutanath Stupa, which is still decorated with strands of marigolds from the recent May 1st holiday. Then it's back to the hotel to start rearranging our gear for tomorrow's trek up to Lukla. Some items will go in our day packs, which we'll carry, some in duffel bags for the guides or porters to carry from town to town, and the rest, like laptops and suitcases, will stay here in Kathmandu, safely stored until we return in 12 days. It's certainly going to take a day or so to get used to a hiking trip where I'm not even carrying a full backpack, but with the major change in elevation, I'm pretty sure I'll get used to it quickly. Day 5, May 3rd, 2018, Kathmandu to Lukla to Padking, about 4.2 miles hiking. My roommate Shari and I are up and showered by 4:15 in the morning. I got a little more sleep than she, as I had pre-weighed my gear for the trek at home, but she was struggling until late to get it down to the 33-pound limit. The single runway airstrip at Lukla is a mere 1,729 feet long, one of the shortest in the world. So only small 16-passenger planes and helicopters have space to land up there, and there's a strict weight limit in order to facilitate safe landings. We meet the gang downstairs at 4:30 and pile together our yellow duffel bags filled with nighttime needs like sleeping bags, toiletries, and extra clothes. Porters will carry these bags for us from village to village when we're on the mountain. We'll carry our day packs ourselves and have filled them with the essentials: cameras, extra layers, sunscreen, water, snacks, and toilet paper. We arrive at the Kathmandu airport at 5 a.m. and wait alongside other groups of trekkers and a handful of locals for it to open. Because the weather in Lukla is unpredictable and it's raining here in Kathmandu, our flights may or may not be able to take off due to visibility issues. Sure enough, 6 a.m., our scheduled departure time, comes and goes. Then 7, 8, 9. At 10:20, we get word that conditions in Lukla have improved and it's go time. It's a mad dash through the gate onto the minibus that takes us over to the small planes. We're all excited, taking pictures out the window, feeling euphoric that we're actually moving. We're about to deboard the bus when the attendant tells us there's been a change in the conditions again, and we return to the terminal to wait it out some more. Dang. We find a table and William buys a deck of cards. I try to teach everyone how to play euchre, and we get off a few good tricks before everyone's brains are too numb to keep playing. Our local guide, Abaya, keeps checking with the airline on the flight status. There's talk of arranging for a helicopter instead, as it's still safe for them to fly in these conditions, and our hope is resurrected. We head to the checkout counter to switch our checked bags from the airline to the helicopter company. But what? Now the original flight might be able to take off after all? We wait some more for them to straighten it out and resign ourselves to catnaps. At 2:30 p.m., 9.5 hours after our arrival, we finally head back to the counter to get ourselves and our gear weighed for proper weight distribution in a helicopter. We get back on the shuttle bus and we're off to the chopper field. It's a tight fit inside the cab as we wait for the go-ahead from radio control. When we finally take off, it's absolutely amazing. A 45-minute flight takes us over ridgelines with terraced farms and deep valleys with rushing glacial rivers. When the clouds part, we get small glimpses of sheer vertical mountain walls covered in snow. We're getting close! We land in Lukla and there are throngs of tired trekkers awaiting departure. Since we couldn't get in, they couldn't get out. The chopper doesn't even stop the rotor, but loads up the next group of passengers and they're off as quickly as we landed. Today's weather delays means that all the rooms in Lukla are booked, so even though it's 5 p.m., we still have to walk 3 hours to get to our original destination if we want beds for the night. We head to a tea house for a quick caffeine boost and to rearrange our gear from duffel bags to day packs. Before we can even calculate how many hours we've been awake, we're walking through town. As overtired as we all are, it feels so much better to be moving our bodies than sitting on our butts in the airport. We pass through the gate at the edge of Lukla and are officially on the road to Everest. We get almost 2 hours of walking in before we have to break out our headlamps and finish the final bit in the dark. We catch glimpses of small homestead farms, tea houses, and lunch places that cater to the throngs of trekkers that pass through. By this hour, most of the porters carrying goods on their back from town to town have finished their work for the night. We cross a bouncy suspension bridge over what I assume is a pretty deep gorge, but it's hard to say how far down in the dark. We arrive at Royal Sherpa Resort in Padking, plunk down our gear, eat a quick dinner, then it's off to sleep. We are spent. Day 6. May 4th, 2018, Pakting to Namche Bazaar, 8.9 miles hiking, elevation 11,300 feet. We start the morning with our first real views of the mountain walls surrounding a sunny Pakting, which is a lovely sight after arriving in the dark last night. Pakting is in a valley between two steep mountain walls that rise up from the Dudkoshi River. We were hearing the river now and again last night, but didn't get a chance to really see it while walking in the dark. After breakfast, we shoulder our packs and start walking. In a few minutes, we come to our first suspension bridge crossing of the day, and wow, it is impressive. The long steel support cables are decorated with Buddhist prayer flags. Chain-link fencing is in place between the cable handrails and the decking. Horizontal metal ridges keep our feet from slipping, which is especially useful, I imagine, when it's raining. Our steps are tentative at first, and we're holding on to railings on both sides. The river below, which is sourced from the glaciers high above, is a gorgeous shade of light aqua blue, the same as my favorite Gatorade flavor and Glacier Freeze. We walk for a bit now on the other side of the river, all the while hearing the sounds of the rushing river below. Now that it is daytime, we really begin to get an understanding of what life is like for the people who live here, as we see porter after porter walking by with copious amounts of materials on their backs, in their hands, or over their shoulders. There are no cars or roads in the whole Khumbu region, just foot and animal paths. Manufactured goods and foods that can't be grown locally get brought up here by plane to Lukla or by helicopter to the other towns in the region. From there, porters carry everything from sacks of rice to cooking pots to building materials and cans of propane gas on their backs. At higher elevations, teams of donkeys and yaks are used to carry larger loads. We see porters of all ages, from 14 to 60, mostly men but some young girls as well. I am humbled both by their strength and by my sheer luck of being born in a country where I don't have to walk to the neighboring town to go to school, let alone carry my building materials home from Home Depot on my back. We stop for a tea, snack, and bathroom break at a trailside tea house in Bangkar. As I'm leaving the toilet shed and back, I am questioned by an older American woman if this is my first time visiting Nepal. I excitedly say, "Yes, isn't it wonderful?" and ask her the same. She says this is her fourth visit and suggests, half scoldingly, that because the Nepalese are very conservative people, I should cover my legs if I want their respect. When I hike, I wear a hiking skort with leggings underneath. When I get hot, I take the leggings off to help regulate my body temperature. I'm a little taken aback by her frankness, and as a New Yorker, also a bit skeptical that she's just a cranky old lady. But I certainly don't want to be disrespectful, so I discreetly ask Abaya about it, and he says that yes, up here it might be best if I wear clothes that cover my knees, but in the cities it's not so much of a big deal. I pull my leggings back on under my skort and feel glad, if not slightly embarrassed, that I asked about it. I like the people here and I want them to like me too. We pass through the village of Manjo, and shortly thereafter cross the border into the Sagarmatha National Park, where we must stop to get our trekking permits. Sagarmatha is the local tribal name for Everest, and it is sacred land that we are entering. Rules are posted about many things, such as not cutting down trees or littering, but my favorite sign suggests that visitors refrain from anger, jealousy, and from taking life. There are also many warnings about acute mountain sickness, AMS, and how to prevent it, as our elevation is about to rise significantly. We cross through the beautifully painted Kani Gate and continue on. The remainder of the afternoon is all uphill, often steep with steps, and we take many breaks to catch our breath. We cross the Larja Suspension Bridge high above the Bhot Kosi Nadi River. It is a replacement for a bridge just below that is no longer safe to use. We marvel at the logistics it must take to get a structure like this built in a place this remote. In another hour or two, we reach the town of Namche Bazaar, our home for the next two nights, and the largest of the region. It is a town built into the side of the mountain, and it is filled with tea houses, hotels, bars, restaurants, and even a North Face store. It is a popular place for climbers, trekkers, and locals alike. On our way up to our hotel, the Nirvana Home, we walk by a beautiful stupa and a brand new statue dedicated to Pasang Lamu Sherpa, the first Nepali woman to summit Everest. And then it's up some steps where we pass through a group of children ecstatically jumping rope. It is so hard to leave them in their rosy cheeks. Many of us are clicking away, but the sun is going down soon and we need to check in. We are welcomed with tea and a chance to warm up in the heated dining room. The father-in-law of the proprietress is the last man alive who worked with Edmund Hillary on his 1953 first ascent of Everest, and he is giving a talk about his experience to a group of New Zealanders. Apparently, our group of six who have just settled in and are reflecting about our all-day hike is being a bit too loud, and some of the folks on the other side of the room are looking our way. An older woman comes up to our table and asks us in so many words to please put a lid on it, but it seems she's talking directly to me. "This is my second scolding of the day. What gives?" We comply, of course, and I am able to brush it off easily. Thankful for the day, thankful to be here with good people. Day 7, May 5th, 2018, Namche Bazaar Acclimatization Day. 5.2 miles hiking, up to elevation 12,729, then back to 11,300. Our morning starts in the usual way, with breakfast at the tea house. Because of the limited staff, we set the time we want to eat and order breakfast the night before so they'll be ready for us. Most places have similar menus, but it's hard to anticipate what you're going to be in the mood for first thing in the morning, so you just have to make the best guess. Eggs and breads seem to be the most popular with our group to get in some protein and carb up for the days. Today I've opted for apple porridge and hard-boiled eggs with milk coffee. Today's goal is all about acclimatizing. We are going up in elevation and then coming back down to Namche in order to get our lungs and our bodies used to the thinner air in the days ahead. Above 5,000 feet, there is less oxygen density in the atmosphere, and your blood has to pump faster in order to bring you enough oxygen. As you acclimatize, your body builds more red blood cells and gains the ability to operate more normally in less dense air. Ascending slowly and gradually helps to prevent symptoms of acute mountain sickness. Taking rest days, such as these, are important also to have the time to take in the towns, the scenery, and try to get a feel for the culture. Our walk brings us up out of the bowl-shaped Namche, and the scenery is gorgeous. Snow-capped mountains, the names of which our guides have told us but I can't remember, shoot up into the sky on all sides. The stepped levels of the town below seem like something out of a Tolkien novel, and the stone monuments and prayer flags lead us on our way. After stopping here and there for breathing breaks, we reach the village of Sangboche, where there is a helipad and stacks of building materials that seem to have just arrived. Again, I am humbled by the ease of which us Americans have access to things. Next stop, and high point of the day, is the aptly named Everest View Hotel, where we get our first clear view of the world's largest mountain. From this angle, Everest itself is dwarfed by some of the nearer mountains, but the entire range wows us, and soon enough we'll be close enough to witness it in all its glory. We have tea and snacks on the outdoor patio and marvel at the majesty of it all before the clouds roll in. Then it's down, 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 back to town. Back in Namche, we have our predetermined lunch at the Nirvana and trade in our hiking gear for town gear, which really doesn't mean much except for leaving our backpacks and trekking poles behind. Caddy, Danny, William, and I get shown around town by Abaya, while Shari and Heather hang back for naps. Danny remembers that it's Abaya's birthday, so William secretly heads to a bakery to pick up some cake for us to surprise him with after dinner. Caddy and I befriend a Nepali girl who speaks to us in English and who is not shy about having her photo taken. Her rosy cheeks and huge smile melt our hearts. We walk past the main water feature running downhill in the center of town, which powers the spinning prayer wheels. Below them is a public washing station for clothes. It is amazing to think that so many people in the world still wash clothing by hand. But then again, what do I know? I live in a gigantic city, one with regular access to electricity and a good public sewage system. The only way to get a washing machine here would be by helicopter, and there are much more important things to spend money on. We get back to the Nirvana and still have time to kill before dinner, so Caddy and I have some tea in the common dining area, which is a bit warmer than our rooms. The proprietress, Kami Sherpa, starts a fire for us to stay warm, which isn't something usually done until around 5 p.m., when most guests start rolling in and as a way to conserve fuel. Because Namche is within the national park boundaries, the locals only have a 2-week window per year where they are allowed to go and cut trees for heat. We are most grateful. Kami tells us a bit about her husband, Shiring, the newly elected mayor of Namche Bazaar, and his plans for improving the region's economy and preparing it for climate change, which they are already starting to feel the effects of. She talks with us about the 12 years they spent saving money in the States, how homesick for the mountains they got at times, but how it also allowed them to save for this tea house. In their culture as the youngest child, it is her husband's responsibility to move into his parents' home and take care of them as they age. Shiring's mother passed away a few years ago, but his father, Kancha Sherpa, now 85, is the only still living member of Edmund Hillary's original 1953 Everest Summit team. They have all worked together to turn Kancha's home into this tea house and lodge. Kancha gives talks about his experience on the mountain, and we will be having one after dinner. It is apparent that we are among good and respected people of this community. The rest of the gang rolls into the dining room around 7 to eat the meals we all decided upon at lunchtime, and Shari whispers to us that after her nap, she went into town to take photos and got some pastries for Abaya's birthday too. Ha! We're gonna feast. Abaya is totally taken aback and is smiling from ear to ear when he walks back in the room and we are singing to him. He cuts everything into pieces and there is more than enough cake to go around, including Kancha, Kami, and the whole kitchen staff. We finish our dessert and Kancha sits with us while we sip tea. Through translation by Abaya, he tells us how he first learned of Tenzing Norgay, the Sherpa who would later summit Everest alongside Edmund Hillary, by seeing some finely dressed women and asking them how it is they were able to afford such nice clothes. Turns out they worked for Tenzing, and by following word-of-mouth directions, Kancha walked all the way to India with two of his friends to find Tenzing's home and ask for work as well. It is Kancha and these two friends who were responsible for many things along the long journey, from carrying heavy boxes of coins, which was payment for all of the porters, from Kathmandu to base camp, for washing Tenzing's clothing, and most notably for setting the ropes ahead of Tenzing and Hillary's final ascent, which they did without the aid of oxygen. It is evident that Kancha thrives off sharing his stories with the public. It truly brings him joy to share this oral history with others, as talking about it helps keep the memories of his departed loved ones present. He is also happy that so many visitors can come and visit this most sacred land due to the improvements that Hillary brought to the Khumbu region in the years following that first ascent, like the Lukla Airport, a school, and a hospital. Prior to Hillary's success in the race to the top of the world, much of the local economy consisted of potato farmers and yak herders. Kancha himself gives back to his community as well. He's created the Kancha Sherpa Foundation, which, in addition to keeping the Sherpa culture alive and promoting sustainable tourism, provides local school children with backpacks, scholarships, and other educational opportunities. A small 500 rupee per person interview fee and supplemental donations from visiting guests help to fund his mission. I fall asleep honored and humbled to be in this place, and most thankful that I am not showing any signs of altitude sickness. Disconnecting and adventuring are some of my absolute favorite things to do, but the act of figuring out how to actually get out there and go on a grand adventure is much easier said than done. Many thanks to William Vasquez of Camera Voyages for stoking those adventure flames and for doing all of the logistical work to help get us there. Thanks too to my fellow Basecamp travel companions and guides, Shari, Caddy, Danny, Abaya, and Heather, for making the journey so memorable. Head on over to girlgottahike.com to see photos of our 2018 journey. And stay tuned for the next episode to hear part two of our Basecamp adventure. Want to learn more about our wonderful hosts in Namche Bazaar or read about what it's like to summit the roof of the world? Links to the Kancha Sherpa Foundation, their Nirvana home, and Into Thin Air are in the show notes. I truly appreciate that you have taken the time to lend your ears this way. If this or any other episode has helped inspire you to get out and explore, then please travel over to Apple Podcast and leave us an awesome comment. Good reviews help spread the word about Girl Gotta Hike and help me to help others head out for adventure. Girl Gotta Hike connects women with nature, confidence, and camaraderie through guided hikes and backpacking trips from New York City to the Catskills and beyond. Looking to head out on a custom-crafted trip of your own? Then be sure to click on the Hire a Private Guide tab over at girlgottahike.com to let me know what kind of adventure you're aiming to take. Custom trips are open to all and are perfect for those wanting to celebrate milestones, have a family adventure, or check off those bucket list hikes like the Devil's Path, Catskill 3500 Peaks, or sections of the Appalachian Trail. Seeking out some hiking besties? Then click on the event schedule and sign up for a group hike instead. You can head to trail without having a car on the monthly public transit series hikes, or go further afield with your new hiking friends on group hikes in the Hudson Valley and the Catskills. While there, you can also check out some handy blog posts and sign up for my monthly-ish newsletter. You can also follow me on Instagram at Girl Gotta Hike, or on the Girl Gotta Hike Facebook page. Until next time, happy hiking!